Liquid Mind really is the music of subtlety, and it can require an enormous amount of patience. At times, the brush strokes are 2 or 3 minutes long, which is quite a while to play a theme.
Most music tries to win our attention with its rhythms and melodies. The music of composer Chuck Wilde does quite the opposite. In fact, if it puts you to sleep, that's okay, it's supposed to. Today we chart 3 decades of the music of Chuck Wilde, an American music maker, on today's Theme and Variations.
Support for Theme and Variations comes from the South Padre Island, Texas Convention and Visitors Bureau. Discover why a Field & Stream magazine called South Padre Island, Texas, one of America's top 20 fishing destinations. For more information, call 1-800-SO-PADRE or online, sopadre.com.
Funding for the American Music Makers series is made possible by a grant from the Argosy Foundation. My name is Will Everett. Welcome back to the program. As you know, we devote a program each month to established and emerging musical talents who are making their dent on contemporary American music. Sometimes that means so-called classical music, but more often we're finding that today's composers resist categorization. As one of our composers brought out a few months ago, when a mother and father have a child, that child becomes its own being with its own identity. So too for music. And with our American Music Makers series, we're trying to throw a light on what we think are some of the more interesting, inspiring, and authentic forms of contemporary musical expression. Another goal of this program is to better understand the creative process. You don't have to be a composer to appreciate the kind of work, discipline, and sources of inspiration that our composers bring to the table. Whether you're a woodworker, a wordsmith, sculptor, or whatever, we hope you'll come away from these conversations with creative insights that apply across the board. For one thing, how do you get from music that sounds like this to music that sounds like this? We went to Hollywood to chat with Chuck Wilde, composer, songwriter, and musician, to talk about his musical journey from keyboardist with the 80s new wave band Missing Persons to Liquid Mind, his acclaimed series of deep relaxation albums. Like most journeys, it didn't follow a straight or logical line. That journey included studio work with Michael Jackson and Frank Zappa, and more than 125 songs written for pop celebrities such as the Pointer Sisters, TV programs like Guiding Light and As the World Turns, film scores, and you name it. He's still a prolific songwriter, but his great labor of love these days is Liquid Mind. It takes some getting used to, music written, as he says, in very long brushstrokes, the purpose being to help the listener slow down. In a way, the music seems designed to help listeners turn their attention inward, and it's no wonder that the series has become so popular with massage therapists, physicians, even veterinarians in helping their patients anesthetize the senses. We're in Hollywood to talk about Liquid Mind and to witness the birth of his just-released CD, Sleep. This CD recently received the imprimatur of Dr. William Dement, director of the Sleep Disorders and Research Center at Stanford University, as a recommended addition to the sleep regimen of anyone with insomnia or anyone just looking for a very good night's sleep. We'll discover how a CD like this comes together, from creation to mastering, and even attend a photo shoot for the CD's evocative cover. But the real subject this hour is Chuck Wilde, an American music maker, on Theme and Variations.
From 1980 to 1984, I was in a pop band called Missing Persons, and I had the great fortune to work with Terry Bozzio and Patrick O'Hearn and Dale Bozzio and Warren Cucurullo, all of whom are some of the most creative people on the planet. The music was very unique, although we were usually categorized as new wave. It was very unique. It was very creative. When we signed to Capitol Records, the group was told, you have 6 years to, or 6 albums to have a hit. That's unheard of today. Today it's, you know, you have a hit or you're off the label almost immediately. So there was an opportunity to be really creative. The Missing Persons time was a really, really wonderful period for me. Part of it had to do with the great people that I was working with. Part of it also had to do with the fact that the music industry at that point in time was still relatively innocent. We had come out of the 60s and the 70s, and all was peace and love. And then in the early 80s, things started to change a little bit. There was a questioning of the free love concept, you know, with the advent of sexually transmitted disease and things like that. All of that started to kind of change the social dynamic, which has always been reflected by the music industry. At that point in time, I think there were also political changes going on in the United States, and globalism was starting to happen in the world. There were a lot of really big changes going on. And because I have a degree in business, I've always been interested in that sort of thing and affected by it. You know, what is the nature of the world that I live in? How does that affect the music that I do? So I feel like being in Missing Persons was a natural outgrowth of the happiness and the joy that I was feeling at that point in time. And as my friends started dying, that started changing. And it changed who I was. And it just, after 3 or 4 more years after that, it just became increasingly difficult for me to do happy, fun music. Not that all of Missing Persons' music was just happy, fun music. You know, some of it was very deep and well-written lyrically and so forth, and musically. But as I grew older, it was just a natural part of the transition to move towards music that respected who I was as a person and made an enormous change in the person I was, to know that I could use my skills in a way that would live way beyond me. Sit around and jam a lot, and in between the jams I would play these really slow chords, the kind of thing I used to play as a church organist when I was in high school. And Patrick O'Hearn said to me one day, he said, Chuck, those are the most beautiful chords I've ever heard, you know. And we kind of jam around with them a little bit, and then it just sort of slipped my mind in a way. When I left Missing Persons, I did some producing and so forth. I wanted to increase my presence as a songwriter. So I asked everybody I knew if they would write a song with me. And I had some friends that had written some pretty cool songs, number one songs. And one of the songs I co-wrote with Marty Sharon and Glenn Ballard, was recorded by the Pointer Sisters, and that got me a publishing deal at Lorimar Telepictures. I was asked if I wanted to co-score the Max Headroom TV series with a wonderful composer by the name of Michael Hunnig, who's a German fellow who was in the group Tangerine Dream, one of the very early renditions of the group. And Michael and I composed the series. Unfortunately, the productions got further and further behind schedule. And what happened was, instead of having 2 weeks to do music for a show per episode, we ended up having only 4 or 5 days to compose 40 minutes of music, compose, record, produce, and mix. And what ended up happening was we started working 20-hour days, and that went on basically for 3 months. I got into sleep deprivation, and I just was working like a maniac, basically. It was really insanity, working 7 days a week, no time off. At the same period in time, a lot of my friends were dying of HIV. I had friends and family with cancer as well. It was a really rough period in my life. It was kind of my first experience with death, I guess. You know, my grandma and grandpa had died, but that was sort of expected. They were at the end of their life. When your best friend dies, that's a whole different situation. But because of the busyness and being signed to Lorimar and so forth, I never processed any of that. And when I got into the state of sleep deprivation, when Max Headroom was canceled, I guess you could say I sort of had a breakdown. It probably wasn't technically a breakdown, a nervous breakdown, but it sure felt like one. And also at that same moment in time, I started to process the enormous loss of losing more than 50 of my friends to HIV, to AIDS it was called back then. And it was really a devastating experience, you know, for everyone, but especially for me. And I started having panic attacks and anxiety attacks where I would be hyperventilating. And they were really, really frightening. At the same time, I came down with a spontaneous case of rheumatoid arthritis. I was in my late 30s at the time, and that's really a surprising thing. Arthritis doesn't even run in our family. And a friend of mine suggested that I go to a 38th generation Chinese healer. 38 generations in the same family. They were all Taoist masters. And so I trucked out to Santa Monica and saw Master Ni was his name. And he suggested that I was killing myself and was very close to doing irreparable harm to my body by staying up and working those long hours and just pushing. So I went on a course of acupuncture, actually, that lasted almost a year. I did take herbs for an entire year, every day, 7 days a week. I carried them around with me, Chinese herbs. And slowly the arthritis went away. It never came back. I've never had anything like that. I started to get my health back, but spiritually and emotionally and mentally, I was in a very fragile place. And I went to see counselors, I got into therapy to find out what in the world would make me work 7 days a week, 20 hours a day, you know, for 3 months. And I sort of got to know myself a little bit. One of the counselors suggested, why don't you do some music that reflects what you'd like to feel like, which certainly for me would be relaxed. The acupuncturist suggested that it might be good for me to take some time off away from L.A., so I went down to Laguna Beach, and I would sit down there day after day, and I'd stand on the rocks right by the ocean, and I noticed that when I did that, the sound of the ocean was deeply relaxing to me, and it was really the sound of the liquid that was calming my mind, and I thought about that. I went, liquid mind, you know? It's very calming to me. And then I thought to myself, what if I could find or compose music that had some of the same characteristics as the ocean. It kind of rises and falls, and it has an energy, but it never stops. And that's what, you know, musically led to Liquid, to the first Liquid Mind. I went back and then I composed 0°0. When I was doing the Max Headroom show, we had what were called spotting sessions, which were meetings where you got together with the producer of the show, a representative of the network, a representative of the production company, and you viewed the new episode and decided where the music was going to be. And as I got more and more sleep deprived and more crazy, one day I had a panic attack during a spotting session. And I thought I was having a heart attack, so they rushed me to the hospital. Everybody, I remember them running out and throwing me in a car and driving a few blocks down Fountain to an urgency clinic, it was called. And the doctor said, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. And I said, well, then why can't I get a good breath right now? And I can laugh about it now. It's very, you know, looking back, it was pretty funny, but... He said, you're having what's called an anxiety attack. And I said, what's that? And he tried to explain to me that it's the fight or flight response producing adrenaline in an uncontrolled way. And my conscious thinking is unable to stop it. And then he held up a bottle of Xanax in one hand and he held up a piece of paper in the other hand. And he said, either one of these work equally well. The piece of paper was meditation instructions. The bottle was Xanax. I tried Xanax for one day, and I couldn't stand it. I just thought, oh, no, this is not for me. I said, I need to find some musical health care instead of medical health care. And, meditation instead of medication. It's only one letter difference. I remember thinking about that and going, wow, that's pretty amazing. Liquid Mind music I really classify as healing music, but that probably relates more to the reasons that I composed the music as much as it does healing is not that descriptive. I think all music is healing to some people. I think I would describe it as ultra slow music. So many albums come out and are classified as relaxation music, but they don't really deeply relax. This music operates on the principle of entrainment. There was a scientist back in the 1600s by the name of Christian Huygens. He was a Dutch fella, and he hung a couple of pendulum clocks on the wall, and the pendulums actually started going at the same rate after a day or two. And this is what we call the principle of entrainment. And that means it's the tendency for organisms to synchronize. This principle operates in music. One of the examples would be disco music. If you listen to disco music, your heart rate is going to go up. You're ready to dance. If you listen to extremely slow music, what happens is your brainwave activity actually slows down. That slows down your respiration. and it slows, can have the effect of lowering blood pressure, and the result is muscle relaxation. And for many people, it might even go on to result in drowsiness.
You're listening to Conversations with composer Chuck Wild on an American Music Makers edition of Theme and Variations.
As entrainment has been studied, it's been discovered that bodily functions like heartbeat, brainwave, and so forth attempt to entrain with their surroundings. We like to harmonize. That's another word that's maybe more user-friendly. I want to harmonize with the tempo of the music. My heart rate will tend towards whatever tempo it is. This music has very slow tempo. It's practically non-existent. So the entrainment occurs because my brain waves may be moving at a higher rate. My heart rate, resting heart rate, may be 70 or 80. And as I listen to slow music, my body attempts to harmonize with that. My music is it's categorized in the New Age category because there isn't really a healing music category. There isn't really a relaxation music category except within the New Age genre. One of the biggest distributors in the New Age area is a company called Music Design, and they actually created, after I released a few Liquid Mind albums and they saw that they were selling, they actually created a genre called MFR, or Music for Relaxation. And so there's a small budding genre, you know, it's very popular at Borders and stores like that, but it's kind of only known within these small areas in terms of the wider scope of music in America. Health practitioners started becoming very interested. I would get phone calls from everything from acupuncturists to hypnotherapists to anger management people to physicians who were working in operating rooms and said the music was an amazing way to bring people out of surgery in the recovery rooms because it was so gentle. I had unconsciously created something that I intuitively knew was healing for me and deeply relaxing, but I didn't really know all the facts and figures about it. If you listen to the music, you'll notice that it doesn't have as much high-end content like treble. You know, most people just know treble and bass. There's actually a mid-range and hundreds of frequencies in the frequency range, but this is frequency-restricted music. It's music that actually I've sort of chopped off any of the, you know, what I perceive to be annoying higher frequencies. They're not annoying in a pop song, but in something that I'm trying to relax to, they might be. And I unknowingly created something that is really useful to a lot of practitioners. It's very popular in yoga studios. It's used for sleep management, anxiety management. It's being tested right now, and I don't really know the details, but it's being tested for use with children, with premature babies, to help them rest and so forth. Basically, people under stress. I got several emails from veterinarians who said, they noticed that the animals, they were listening to it to relieve their own stress, and they noticed that, animals who had been operated on were suddenly able to rest without as much medication. So that all raised my interest. Liquid Mind really is the music of subtlety, and it can require an enormous amount of patience. At times, the brush strokes are 2 or 3 minutes long, which is quite a while to play a theme or to develop a theme, and the developments may be 4 or 5 minutes long. I write in a very organic way. A lot of times, I'll sit at the piano and write. Other times I will write in my head and hear a whole theme and hear the changes and I'll just sit and play them. Occasionally I will improvise it, although more often than not there's something that I'm just hearing that I want to communicate. In a way, this is the anti-pop, because Liquid Mind, I don't want people to listen to it. I want them to experience it. Pop music, you want everything, and I know because I was a pop songwriter for many years, you want people to, you want to grab people's attention and not let it go. And this is actually the diametric opposite of what I would do if I were writing a pop song. It's the complete opposite. I want to smooth off the rough edges. I don't want the melody to be too loud. If I can have it be subliminal and still be experienced, then it will be subliminal. I was recently talking to a friend of mine who does special ed over at Kaiser. She works with autistic children, and she was telling me that these kids have an extreme sensitivity to sound. And I recalled that that was exactly the way I felt when I was having panic and anxiety attacks. I couldn't stand bright light. I didn't leave my house. I didn't want to hear the sound of a car or truck going by. All that sort of thing was really frightening to me, and I had a hypersensitivity. And I reduced the high frequencies of the music in an attempt for it to be more comfortable for me. Nothing that really jumped out. I didn't want things that were grabbing my attention. I just wanted music to massage me like the ocean did during that period that I spent so much time standing on the rocks in Laguna Beach. The ocean has interest. You know, there are waves and there's an ebb and flow in it, and there's an undercurrent that's very energetic, the undertow, so to speak. My music has undertows. It has little, you know, little energies and arpeggios going through it. A lot will have arpeggios just below the audible level, but that's because it then becomes less of a threat to someone who's highly sensitive. On Liquid Mind 5 Serenity, I started singing some of the chords myself because I like the texture of my voice. I have kind of a grainy sort of voice, and I thought, well, maybe I can sing some of the chords. And I found that blending that in was really a nice thing. I believe I started that on the fifth album. On the fourth album, I experimented with putting higher levels of white and pink noise in. You'll hear it sounds kind of shh. There's like almost an air sound on the fourth album, Liquid Mind 4 Unity. But on the fifth album, I started adding in some vocals, and they're very, very subtle. I don't want to attract attention away from the relaxing quality of the music, so they're really deeply blended. It's more something that's felt. It's a textural effect, and there might be 30 tracks of vocals singing these chords, and you may not actually be aware that you're hearing vocals. Mm-hmm. They're not constant, but it comes and goes. When I originally wrote Liquid Mind, the music was born out of fear. I was really afraid. It was an irrational fear, but, well, to some degree it was rational, you know, because of the death that I was being exposed to, and my friends dying. What I'm feeling these days is anger. I feel a lot of anger about what's going on in the world, about what's going on environmentally, about what's going on politically in some cases. It feels to me like a culture of greed that we're living in. And I think that's going to have some really bad side effects. I mean, it always does when one class of people tries to impose their will on a lot of people. And there's just a lot going on, and my reaction to that might be to do angry music, or my reaction might be to continue to do peaceful music. And I really think I'm probably tending towards continuing to do peaceful music, because I can have two responses. If somebody does something to me which makes me angry or makes me fearful, I can go with the anger and I can feel that emotion. But then I also have the choice of whether or not to wallow in that or whether to move forward into a place of healing and something that works for me and that keeps me functional as a human being. So I think that speaks somewhat to the future of what I'm doing. I'm actually doing a side project with Mike Whitfield, who's a singer-songwriter that I've worked with from time to time. And we're doing songs with universal values. And that's it. It's not necessarily religious. It could be interpreted however you like it. There's no agenda behind it. It's just songs with values. If you listen to it, it's kind of like Liquid Mind with words. There are no drums. The guitar, the acoustic guitar, provides the rhythm. It's more active music, but it feels very good because the intention of the music is really good. And intention of the music is really, really important to me.
Let's listen to one of the products of that collaboration, a song called Let There Be Light, music by Mike Whitfield and Chuck Wild. Let there be light.
peace in the world. Divine illumination, let there be light in every mind. Let there be joy in every heart. Let there be love in every life. Let there be peace in every nation.
That was a song called Let There Be Light by Mike Whitfield and Chuck Wild. Vocals by Mike Whitfield. You're listening to an American Music Makers edition of Theme and Variations, and we're showcasing the composing talents of Chuck Wild, creator of the Liquid Mind series of albums for relaxation and healing. As part of my visit to Hollywood to talk to Mr. Wild about his music, I had the opportunity to participate in the making of his newest album, Liquid Mind 8, Sleep. He was still laying down the final tracks when I arrived, and during an off moment, I asked him to give me a tour of the studio. Like many musicians in the age of information, technology enables Chuck Wild to create his music in a home studio. And his home is literally his studio. Nearly every room is banked with speakers of different sizes, so that the composer can sample his music in a multitude of listening environments. Entering the studio proper, you're confronted by something like a dozen keyboards mounted on tiered racks, computers, five large monitors, and a dizzying array of hardware all arranged around a central console, the place where the magic takes place.
A lot of what I do is based on sound. I'll have an idea, and like right now I hear something, I hear an idea, and I'm just expressing it with the limitations of this string sound, which has a very slow attack, so it helps me in that way. Because the beginning of the sound, no matter what note I play, develops very slowly, it allows me to communicate that in a way that is immediately in the liquid mind vibe, sort of. One of the hallmarks of Liquid Mind is that it almost never stops, but it's slow enough that it gives me an opportunity to develop something that's meaningful to me. That started out with an idea, but it ended up an improvisation, because I hadn't really heard the theme all the way through. I love using minor chords. A lot of New Age music steers away from the melancholy. And, you know, in some sense, is born out of European folk music. But I think my influences go, you know, go into a lot of the minor music from Rachmaninoff, some of the Russian composers. So when I'm constructing Liquid Mind, I'll start out in general with something like that. And then I'll listen back to it and see if it communicated the themes.
Now you have speakers all through your house. Tell
I
me
do.
About that.
Well, all the speakers represent different listening areas. I listen in my car quite a bit. I listen in the living room, and I hear different parts of the frequency range on all these speakers. Because sound is so important in the liquid mind, it's really important for me to listen on multiple systems. I listen at three different levels, quiet, medium, and loud, on seven different systems. For example, out in the living room, there's a really good low-frequency response there, and I'll listen there. The end part of the process is going over to visit Bernie Grundman, who, it's my understanding, has almost 40 or more Grammys than anyone in the technical area. And Bernie is a mastering engineer, and his room is highly tuned. And when I take things over there, it sounds very similar to this room.
I didn't expect to show up just in time to witness both the mastering of the album and the shooting of the album cover, but that's what happened. We drove to the studios of Bernie Grundman, a few blocks off Sunset Boulevard. He's a man with some 37 Grammy nominations for works he's mastered for the likes of Prince, Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson, Kenny G, and Alanis Morissette. Framed photographs are splashed across the walls, and I realize that I'm standing on the spot where Joni Mitchell worked with Grundman on one of her albums. Hollywood is the sort of place where you're always expecting to run into a celebrity, but here you get the feeling that you might at any time happen to meet a true legend. And in his quiet way, that's what Grundman is, a legend, designing most of his own equipment and manning it with the authority of one for whom substance is all that really matters.
My biggest concerns today are matching the levels, and I've tried to do that to some degree.
So that's
one concern. The other concern is just to make sure that the low end, you know, home studios, want to make sure that the bass end is
not too heavy.
Not too heavy, but
heavy.
I love that organ bass.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah.
We're here to put the final mastering touches on an album called Sleep. And as things get rolling, I remember something Chuck told me about the difficulty in composing an album geared to put one to sleep.
It's very difficult to stay awake when I'm mixing the music. Like when I'm working on it in the early stages and doing the editing and composing and changing a lot. But when I, like the stage I'm at right now, it's almost like a water torture to try and stay awake because I have to listen to the album beginning to end for 60 minutes. Basically, a very, very slow, relaxing music. And the owner of Real Music, the label that I'm signed to, which incidentally is a wonderful, very supportive label, Terrence Yalop is his name, and he mentioned to me one day that he thought perhaps one of the reasons I was able to do the music in the particular way that I do is because I'm almost in a trance state when I write the music. And when I work on it, and it's really true, it's a bit of an altered consciousness.
I begin to understand what he meant by going into a hypnotic state. It's sort of embarrassing. I'm here to participate in a crucial stage of the production of this album. Suddenly, after I've been listening to 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes of tweaking and shaping, the music starts doing what it's supposed to do. I'm sitting just behind Wilde and Grundman. The last thing I remember thinking is, gosh, I hope they aren't noticing. And a moment later, the curtain comes down, and I'm out.
Very flat, and it's all no processing or anything. It's very pure and natural.
Your speakers have great clarity.
Most of the CD covers for Liquid Mind have been shot by Glenn Wexler, a man considered one of the pioneers of digital photography. The images on Wilde's covers give the soothing sounds of visual reality. A baby cradled in a silvery liquid. A woman who seems to float in space. A thin shaft of light over still water. This time, Wexler has settled on a more literal interpretation of the album and what it's supposed to do. We enter a spacious warehouse, at the center of which, framed in shaded lights, we see a large bed. Bags of soft goose feathers stand at the ready, and soon a sleek, elegant young woman emerges from a dressing room wearing a thin white negligee. In a while, not surprisingly, she climbs into bed.
We're gonna do three setups. One is the primary cover idea that we're going for, and essentially it's gonna be just a really peaceful, tranquil shot of the woman sleeping, and we'll do little things to just give it a little bit of an edge. We're gonna add some feathers in the folds of the sheets, I'm going to shoot at kind of an eye level point of view across the bed. So behind the woman, we'll probably do some type of outdoor, like nighttime scene, just to give it, just take it out of the ordinary just a little bit. And then we're going to go in. We're going to also, for one of the inside graphics, we'll do like an ultra close, real tight shot of her face, of her sleeping. And the and then time permitting, I'm going to try to shoot the third idea, which is her down in the feathers, and we'll just get that in the can, and we'll see. Just have it as an option.
We watch Wexler and his assistants pose the model, positioning her lying at the edge of the bed, her hands casually supporting the pillow. One of the assistants sprinkles a few feathers over her, with her dark hair and caramel skin. She might be a recumbent Cleopatra, preserved in a deep, delicious sleep.
A couple frames are in there, good. Put your head up just a tiny bit.
It will take several hours for Wexler to get the right shot, and many more hours of manipulating the light and shadows and creating the backdrop of a dusky sky flecked with gently falling feathers. But the time is well spent. These album covers are works of art in themselves. In fact, the prints command a high selling price and are included in his recent retrospective book, 2525. We don't stay for the whole shoot. We leave as one of Glenn Wexler's assistants piles on more goose feathers, careful to avoid the model's face so as not to disrupt the pose with a big sneeze. We head back to Chuck's house in time for an impromptu long-distance telephone concert with his 96-year-old father in Kansas City. With all the talk about electronic music, I'd managed to forget that Chuck's an accomplished pianist.
So whenever I sit down at the piano, I think of my dad, who paid for all the music lessons. Dad lives in Kansas City still. He's almost 97 years old. And I visit my dad a lot, but when I can't, I come over and I call him on the piano. And I play a selection of his favorite songs, and he sings along with them. And it's really a lot of fun. His favorite song is Satin Doll, which I think was written by Duke Ellington and Billy Strayhorn. Dad will sing along, and he used to play. He used to play sax too. So we'd go da 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 da. Music is such a wonderful thing. It speaks so many different languages. Story that Duke and Billy would write every night after the gig. They'd just sit up in their hotel room and write these amazing songs.
Toward the end of our visit, Chuck told me about another recent music project, a commission that came about through very unusual circumstances that went back to 1921, when his father had a serendipitous meeting with the great World War I General John Pershing.
The Liberty Memorial Commission came about, it's kind of a long story. My dad was president of the Board of Governors of the Liberty Memorial for 10 years, and he was also on the Board of Governors for 25 years, and it's kind of a coincidence, but he was the Boy Scout aide to General John Pershing the day that the Liberty Memorial was dedicated on, which I believe was November 1st, 1921. And so my dad is, the Liberty Memorial Monument and Museum has always been a part of my dad's life ever since he was 11 years old. On Memorial Day of 2002, there was a huge rededication ceremony. And General Richard Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was present for the rededication ceremony and gave the address. After the ceremony, a couple of folks came up to me. One was General Steve Burkheiser, the executive director of the Liberty Memorial, and his co-director, a fellow who had done a lot of the fundraising for the rededication, was a spirited guy by the name of Carl DiCapo. And Carl came up to me in his usual style and said, "Well, Chuck, what do you do for a living?" And we were standing there with Dad, and I said, "Well, I'm a songwriter. I live out in Los Angeles." And he looked at General Burkheiser, and General Burkheiser looked back at him, and they both smiled. And Carl said, "You need to write a song for the Liberty Memorial." And I just sort of laughed, and I said, "Well, I'll give it some thought." And I went back to Los Angeles, and I thought about it for a few weeks. I wanted to make sure that the song that I would be writing, or a song I could get behind, would be something that philosophically I was in line with. And I gave it a lot of thought, and I read up on the Liberty Memorial and why it was originally constructed. And it was constructed to honor not only people who lost their lives in war and Americans who fought in the world wars, but it was also constructed to honor the concept of liberty. The dictionary defines liberty as being the condition of being free from restriction or control. And I thought, you know, that's really what America is about. And so I called them up and I said, "You know, I would love to write a song if I can call it O Liberty, and if it will honor not only those who passed on, but the song will honor the concept of liberty."
Sweet liberty, we honor those who fell with courage, love, and bravery. They passed the test so well.
About a month later, I had written most of the song and most of the lyric, and I called him on a day that coincidentally just happened to be a meeting of the board of directors of the Liberty Memorial. And he was on the speakerphone there, and he said, "Why don't you just sing it for us right now?" And I was like singing different parts. I said, "The timpanis will come in here, and it'll have a big brass fanfare at the front." And he said, "Wow, it sounds great." I did a demo of it with a wonderful singer by the name of Billy Trudell. And I, on my next trip to Kansas City, I went over to the Liberty Memorial and made an appointment to play it for the general. And we were standing in the auditorium. There's a great big auditorium in the new museum there at the Liberty Memorial. And I played it for General Burkheiser, and he was just speechless. He turned to me and he said, "This is the crowning jewel of this whole process of rebuilding the Liberty Memorial and bringing it to national attention."
God and honesty we trust, may truth ring freedom's bell. In war and peace we shall not cease, throw off the tyrant's chains. For freedom's cause your flame burns bright, your shining light remains. O liberty, we honor thee, and God your sovereignty. In truth we stand here strong and free, for all the world to see. Guide us, O liberty. God, your sovereignty.
You've been listening to Conversations with musician, songwriter, and composer Chuck Wild, part of our American Music Makers series on Theme and Variations. Mr. Wild's album Liquid Mind 8, Sleep, has just come out on the Real Music label. More information at realmusic.com. These American Music Maker broadcasts are made possible through a grant from the Argosy Foundation, with additional funding from the Texas Commission on the Arts and the South Padre Island, Texas Convention and Visitors Bureau here in tropical South Texas, online at sopadre.com. Your cards and letters are always welcome here at the Treehouse. Write to P.O. Box 3699, South Padre Island, Texas, 78597. We're online at treehouseproductions.org. On our next installment of American Music Makers, meet Stuart Hines, an innovator in the field of harmonic throat singing. He can sing two melodies at once. Just try it. This is Will Everett. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next time. This has been a creation of Treehouse Productions.